Welcome back, The Lighter Side. Today, Tom and I are talking franchise leaders, the all-time playoff points leaders for all 31 NHL teams. Tom, welcome. How's it going?
Joe, glad to be here. Excited to talk about some of my favorite players of all time and let people know some things about their games and why they were so successful in the money time of the season.
Yeah, I know you're excited about this one when you brought it up the other day. So let's go through the list. It's going to cover all 31 teams, and the way that this list is formatted, it starts, the first team highlighted would be the Edmonton Oilers, since Wayne Gretzky has the most points all time. And then all the way down through the 31st team. So there's no alphabetical order or anything like that. It's going from the top points getter on down. And that's how the teams are broken up. So today we'll talk 1 through 10. And as you mentioned, you know, there's some interesting stuff on the list as far as active leaders and other players. And why not have Wayne Gretzky and the Edmonton Oilers start a list? Is they have the three leading playoff point getters of all time on their team, like starting with Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, Joe, great team to start with, and no surprise really to any hockey buff. I mean, they played in the run and gun 80s for most of their all their cup wins, and except that, you know, in the Gretzky era anyway, and he had 252 total points in those four cups that he was part of. The thing about him, Joe, and you know, he had another 94 when he went to LA, so you're talking over 300 points plus with the total of playoff magic. But you know, I talk about the Edmonton Oilers and Gretzky, as great as he was, I mean, you had about six of the top 10 players in the world on that roster at the time. And some of the goals they scored were just highlight, you know, real goals. It's just, you got two wingers like Messi, or two players like Messier and Anderson, probably the top five players of all time, going hard and crashing the net with the speed they had. People don't know this, but Glenn Anderson was probably one of the better skaters of all time in this sport. Kind of gets lost in translation because of all the great players that he played with. So you got Gretzky dishing the puck to Curry, a smart, you know, Finnish player. And, you know, no matter who they plugged in with him, I mean, players knew his style. They knew Gretzky's tendencies. So he'd come over that blue line and cut the grain, and you know, had all these players coming late, you know, like Paul Coffey and guys who could fill seams like Messier and Anderson at times. And I mean, that's just, you know why he has 252 points, Joe.
Yeah, I know this is about the points leaders for the team, but I love to give Jari Kurri some love whenever I can, because again, I feel like everyone forgets him, and he's almost viewed as like the Gretzky follower because he ends up playing with Gretzky in LA. And you could probably make an argument that Jari Kurri made Wayne Gretzky better at times just from his pure goal scoring ability, but nobody has more playoff goals for a franchise than Jari Kurri with the 92 that he put up for the Edmonton Oilers. So we'll give some love to Jari Kurri.
That says it all. And, you know, another, you know, the 92 goals, okay? You know, that would suggest this guy was one-dimensional, but I'm telling you, he was very underrated defensively. And like Brett Hull, who was also underrated in this aspect, the guy could pass the puck. So you're playing Curry out there. You're Glenn Sather. You don't have to worry about any deficiencies away from the puck. Man, what a luxury that is to have. Right. And he had that dimension with a lot of players, so he could mix and match. And, you know, the only other coach I could see that had that luxury or that feeling of that luxury that in that depth was probably Bowman with some of the Red Wing teams.
Right. Right.
But what's Wayne Gretzky? I mean, we all know, you know, the goals he scored and the way he distributed the puck. So really not a shocker here.
Yep, and the active leader for the Oilers is Leon Draisaitl with 16 points. So he's got a promising career. He's probably going to be a career Oiler. So we'll see if he can bump up to be in this top five Edmonton Oilers. Number two is the Colorado Avalanche. Joe Sakic put up 188 points. So just notice that disparity there. Wayne Gretzky, most points all time for one franchise in the playoff, 252. The next most, Joe Sakic, 188 for the Colorado Avalanche.
Right. And you keep in mind, Joe, like you just mentioned the active leader for the Edmonton Oilers and Draisaitl with a lousy 16 points. All that tells you is, you know, these teams, it tells you the how hard it is to sustain, like, playoff success. And there was a long dry spell with Edmonton for a long period of time. So as Edmonton gets more consistency and they start building around Draisaitl and McDavid, you're going to see those numbers pop into the 90s and the hundreds and the probably close to 200s once they sustain it. But you do have to make cup runs to do this, to put these numbers up. And Sakic definitely came from a Colorado Avalanche team that did that. I believe his run started with a small bit with the Quebec Nordiques for a year or so. But man, this guy is a deadly shot. We talked about it in previous shows, how he had that little snapshot that he's one of these guys, whenever it was on a stick and he was within 20 feet of the net and he let that shot go, I was thinking that had to put the fear of God in goalies.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I loved watching him shoot. I loved his wrist shot. It was different than Messier's, but it was almost as beautiful to watch as Messier's.
Right, off that front foot, kind of.
Yep.
Yeah, Messier would come steaming down the off wing, and I see Messier do that in an old-timers game, and it brought back so many memories, and it was kind of his, that was his, what do you call it, just his trademark.
Right.
But Sakic, you know, this guy had that shot. He did it all over the ice, right, below the dots, top of the circle. Man, he just, when the Wings and the Avalanche had those tough series and those rivalry games, whenever that guy, him and Hajduk, Milan Hajduk, Forsberg would be in the zone and just, yeah, just a little seam, you know, you say, okay, don't let Sakic get the puck on his stick. You know, you had to play shadow defense on him and relentlessly throughout the whole shift, or he was going to make you pay. And a lot of his goals and a lot of his 188 playoff points probably were the result of that shot. Because another thing it also produced was a lot of rebounds, because it was a quick release and goalies couldn't really get set to soak in those rebounds. So you had a lot of nice, juicy little, you know, plates of food sitting there for Forsberg and any other player that played with him
right
during that time.
Right. Their active leader is the young star, Nathan MacKinnon, with 29 points.
Right.
The next team, number three on the list, it's only a matter of time before he becomes the fourth player in NHL history to score 200 or more points for one team in the playoffs. That's Sidney Crosby of the Pittsburgh Penguins, 186 points, 14 better than Super Mario, who's second on that team.
Yeah, that surprises me. You would think with as long as Lemieux was in the league, I think his team only missed the playoffs once. It's probably his rookie year, maybe. I could be wrong there too, but it just goes to show you the great teams they've had over the years. And they basically, it shows me they made two different runs. You know, not many teams can say that, but they had a lot of first round picks that helped them. Crosby being one of them on that second phase of their dynasty run. And I guess we can categorize that as dynasty, even though that to me back in the day, it used to mean four or five cups in a row. But now I guess it's like if you get three in 6 years or whatever, because of the way the collective bargaining agreement, and Bettman loves his parity. But yeah, Crosby, I played junior hockey with his dad. His dad was our backup goalie to Vince Riendo. And this guy, I never would have thought he would have a kid that had this much athleticism, because Troy Crosby, he reminded me of an accountant. with goalie pants on. It just, you would never picture this kid to come out of his dad. As far as offspring, and but he's so athletic. He does so many different things well, and I think his numbers, Joe, are attributed to the fact that this guy can play in any style game, whether it's physical, whether it's a track meet, and he's not gonna, it's not gonna alter his game. You know what I mean,
right.
Joe?
Right.
Yep. He's only going to stay on point. He's going to get to spots on the ice. He's not going to let people get in his head, rent space in his head. He's always going to do the little things to make a difference. And it shows in his consistency and his point total here. You know, I believe he'll move up. He'll be moving past Sakic in the if they can resume the season this year. It'll be this year. He'll move up to that second slot for sure. And yeah, he'll bump into that 200 point plateau for sure. I think his team will get to through two rounds, at least three rounds, and you know what you need for a good 14 to 20 points.
He's young enough still, and Pittsburgh's good enough for him to put some pressure on Gretzky's 252 mark with one franchise, because Crosby's not going anywhere anytime soon.
No, and I believe, I still think he's the, if somebody, Joe, if you ask me who the best player in the world is right now, I'm still going to say Sidney Crosby. Sorry to all the what's the kid or McDavid fans, McDavid. And everything. I love his game and everything like that. But, you know, sorry, you got to win some hardware, and you got to get your team over the hump before I'll even put you in that category. So, I'm a hard sell on that. I'm old school. You got to win some hardware, and Sid's been doing it, and he continues to do it at a high level, even coming off concussions, which is even more impressive. And I know we love to hate him here in Detroit, but you know, I'm a realist. I'll paint it real. So Sidney Crosby is the best player in the world, and right now to this day, and even better than Ovechkin. Because he does it, he does more on the ice, and but his point totals will push over 200, and I believe he has a couple more cups in him too, before his career's over.
Yeah, he gets he's obviously not a fan favorite in Detroit, and it still bugs me the year that Canada beat U.S. in overtime, and he scored that goal because he was invisible that entire game, and then he comes out of nowhere and scores that goal in overtime. And he gets, you know, you hear the crybaby Crosby, and I heard something pretty good the other day. There's a sports show talking about that Michael Jordan, The Last Dance, and you know, the documentary that ESPN's doing right now, and talking about him, you know, being petty. And the host made a good point. You know, he said, if you're going to be great, you got to be petty. You're so competitive that any little thing that's not perfect is going to bug you. Anything that affects your game or gets in your way is going to set you off and put you over the edge. And you see that in all the great players, Gretzky, Crosby, Lemieux, like they're the best, and they want everything their way. They want to conquer every little thing. It's just the competitive nature of it.
Joe, you're right. Any sport, you look at the superstars. Isaiah Thomas was like that, almost quirky in their pettiness, to the point where, I mean, they'd be fighting teammates in practice and doing, you know, trust me, it happens. Any championship team, it's not all roses. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes behind playing at high level, you know, and getting systems down properly, and repetitiveness. And these guys, these type of guys, they're perfectionists. They want to be the best, and they will their teammates to be the same. And sometimes when you're dealing with personalities that don't you know, fit that bill. You know, you see it a lot in the NBA because of the disparity of the athlete. You know, there's a lot of laziness in that sport. You know, in between the ears too, and it's just like you have to be that way. Now I'm looking at Pittsburgh, and you know, I see, you know, Malkin is up there. I'm sure him and Crosby had their battles. I mean, because Malkin, early in his career, he was a handful. He had shifts where he would look pathetic, and the Wings exploited him a few times early in his career. A lot of other teams did, which is why they had a lot of playoff failure. But I think once him and Crosby got on the same page, I mean, they were pretty much a Stanley Cup threat every year. So there's no mistake that Crosby is up this high, and he will eventually be number two pretty soon.
Number four, we come home to Detroit. 185 points for Steve Yzerman, and surprising Gordie Howe, who played 25, 26 seasons in the league, most of them with the Red Wings. He sits fourth on the Red Wings all-time points list.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, Joe, might be because you didn't have as many rounds to get to the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
There could be a lot of validity to that. But Yzerman, his point total is basically more of an endurance thing. He definitely won a Conn Smythe, I believe, didn't he, one year?
Yes.
But he had his consistent point producing playoffs. Had a lot of early exits as well, but you know, I mean, you're just talking a guy that played in the playoffs quite a bit, and even if it went one round, he would probably get 3 or 4 or 5 points. So that's more or less what you're seeing with Yzerman. But until he changed his game, we all know the story. Bowman forced him to change his game, or he was going to be shipped. And only a coach like Bowman could do that. I think if you had another coach, Joe, any other coach in the league that would have threatened that, you would have seen either Yzerman being dealt or the coach being traded, and then we bringing in another guy again, you know, it's a carousel.
Right.
I remember Bowman used to be able to do that with Guy Lafleur, Larry Robinson, all the Hall of Famers in those Montreal teams from the late 70s. And if he's going to be able to do it to those Hall of Fame players, who's Yzerman to argue that? So, you know, that's why that happened. That's why his point totals are 185, and why he became the leader he became. And the team got over the hump and had playoff success year after year, and made at least 2 to 3 rounds, which is why he has that point total. But Stevie could do it all. I mean, he was another guy that played the power play. He could score the shorthanded goal. He could make other teams, players better. And, you know, even players like Gerard Gallant, who, you know, I played with, and, you know, Spuddy would be the first guy to tell you he didn't have all the talent in the world. But, you know, he had some big 40-goal years playing with a guy like Yzerman because, you know, Stevie drew so much attention, and there's a lot to be said for that. And Stevie could facilitate the puck and, you know, get the big goal and show some flash doing it, you know. And I like watching his highlight, you know, reel over the years of his goals and, you know, how he inspired his teams. So no surprise why his teams had long playoff runs that would allow him to have a point total like that, Joe.
Yeah, the active leader currently is Valtteri Filppula with 57.
Okay, that's interesting, isn't it? That's kind of, you know, it just kind of goes to show you know, Valtteri came back home. Mm-hmm. So he was a young player that could play both sides of the puck. And, you know, that's not a bad point total for him. Because he was a third and fourth line guy when he did a lot of that damage. So that just goes to show you, how the Wings won those cups, because he was predominantly a shutdown player. Probably the other teams on the mismatch on their home ice.
Yep.
He had to be called on to shut the other teams down, and I'm sure some of that was some turnovers in the neutral zone. And Valtteri Filppula was a good player back then. The reason he got knocked out of Detroit the first go round was because he wasn't shooting the puck enough.
Mm-hmm.
He had some offensive ability, and but he did his role, and that's why he's got what he's got in playoffs, which is pretty impressive total actually for a guy like that.
Yeah, yep. It's quite a few playoff appearances when he was young with Detroit. I don't know if he's going to have a chance to add to it before he retires if he stays a Red Wing. But
I'm hard-pressed to see him hit 60.
Yep. Yeah. No, well, number five, you mentioned the Canadian teams of the late 70s. They're the only franchise that has eight players with 100-plus playoff points. And the all-time leader is Jean Béliveau with 176.
Yeah, that's a product of 24 Stanley Cups in the history of that franchise, Joe. Béliveau played probably you probably won eight of those.
Yeah, he's got quite a few.
Then you have Henri Richard with 11 Stanley Cups, which I don't think will ever be broken. It's just a lot of great history on those teams with Béliveau, a lot of great players. And, you know, 176 points in the original six, Joe.
Yes.
Not bad.
Yes.
So he probably punched a few 20-point playoff seasons, which is pretty impressive. And he did that probably what'd you have to win? Eight games to win the cup.
Yeah, it wasn't near as much as it is now. It was originally eight. I don't know if he made it, if he was still playing when they extended it. I don't remember.
He was playing
here. He was into the early 70s.
Early 70s, and I believe I remember looking up his stats one playoff in his later years, and man, I think he had like 20 some points in one of his last playoffs, and I remember just shaking my head over that, because I watched Del Vecchio, some of his stats with some bad Red Wing teams in the 70s, mid 70s, before he ended his career. He was in the 70 points. So there's a lot to be said for those old guys back then, later in their careers, how smart they were and how big of a factor that is, playing in the 70s and how it got them by, you know, as their bodies were aging. But, yeah, he did. I think Béliveau in the early 70s had a 20-point season in the playoffs and against some pretty good teams, because they weren't supposed to win that last cup they won with him. There was a better Boston team, I believe, and, you know, with Bobby Orr and the Big Bad Bruins and some of the other upstart teams, the Rangers and stuff. So the Canadians kind of snuck one out there when they weren't supposed to, and he was a big part of that. So no surprise that he has that total, but, you know, he had to have some pretty impressive playoffs, consistently putting big points up to get numbers like that in the original six.
Yeah, I was just looking real quick. That was his best playoff year, his final year, 70-71, 22 points in 20 games.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
Smooth player, too. They liken a lot of players to him that come into from the Quebec League and out of the Quebec area, like Mantha and all that, because they got size like him. And mm-hmm. But, man, that guy was so smooth, and I used to get my paychecks from him. I used to go up and grab my paycheck, physically a paycheck from him. And I always look back, and because it had his signature on my paycheck. And it was right. Funny because I was home rehabbing my knee injury, going off a little bit here on the show's topic. But a cool little story. I used to a bank right outside the tunnel there. I think there was Nova Scotia or whatever the bank was. And I was home doing rehab on my knee, and I would get these physical checks sent to me. And when I was in Montreal, you know, at the time I would go pick them up at the Forum right from them. And he would hand me an envelope, and I'm looking at these checks, you know, and it's got his signature on them. I was so stupid. I should have kept one of them. But it's like they were, you know, a lot of money, and it's like, okay, I'm putting them in the bank, like as soon as I get home in the crossing the tunnel and going and doing my banking. And but yeah, just a funny story. But what a classy guy. I mean, a classy guy. Everything they say about him is true.
Yeah, 16 straight years in the playoffs. Yeah, through the 50s into the early 70s, 71, only missed the playoffs once that, like you said, when Montreal wasn't supposed to win, they missed the playoffs the year prior, but then got back in and won that cup. So the current leader for the franchise is active leader Brendan Gallagher with 21 points.
Wow.
Number six takes us to the early 80s. Brian Trottier, 170 points for the New York Islanders.
Yeah, this guy, Joe, I'm telling you, a lot of the players we just discussed, like the Stevie Yzermans and Joe Sakic, they wear number 19 for a reason. It's because of this guy. So a lot of people don't know that, but this guy was a pretty tough player. Could do it all, played with some great teams. I wonder what his totals were in Pittsburgh, too.
Yeah,
he had a nice run there, too, albeit short, but he was pretty productive. I'm easily could have added another 30, 40 points, I think, from those teams. But this guy could do it all, Joe. He played with great players, and Islander team had a lot of character, and they were professional, and they could beat you many different ways, and you know, and he's proof of it. Good two-way player, played in all situations, scored in all different ways, and always he's a money player like Nystrom, you know, guy who didn't score as much as Trottier, but they're both deemed money players. They get that big goal as well. So a lot of his 170 points. There's a lot of shine on that 170 because he scored a lot of big goals.
Yeah, let's talk about a fun fact that I did not know until I was looking up some stuff for Trottier. After he retired in Pittsburgh after the 94 season, he played 1 year of roller hockey for a Pittsburgh team.
I did not know that.
Neither did I. I saw it when I was, which cracks me up because you think of a guy that played hockey in the 70s and 80s and rollerblading really wasn't a thing. And you got this legend showing up to play some roller hockey.
What year was that?
94 for the Pittsburgh Phantoms of whatever the RHI league was. I wonder if that was that ESPN league that they threw together? I don't remember what the name of that. Remember seeing that?
I don't. Yeah, I don't. You know what's fun? I tell you a funny story about that too. My buddy, who's the best agent in the NHL right now, Pat Brisson. You've heard the name. Mm-hmm. He's clients are all Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, all the big guys. John Tavares. His son's going to be drafted too. He's projected to go 16 in the first round. Ironically. But he started that league because remember I told you that one story where he went over to he played with me in Verdun, got traded to Hull the next year, ended up in Drummondville. But when he was in Hull, he played with Luke Robitaille. So Luke got drafted with Jimmy Carson, who played in Verdun. They both went first round to L.A., and they played with Marcel Dion in his later years. Well, Marcel took both of those first-round picks under his wing. Well, Luke Robitaille ended up in L.A. and started becoming good, you know, and he took Patrice Brisson with him to run some of his business ventures. Well, one of those business ventures was to start that rollerblade league in Florida. Remember the outdoor one?
Yeah, yep.
And that was Patrice Brisson's baby because I remember watching it on ESPN. It was like 90 degrees out in there and playing this roller hockey league. And I was laughing at it at first. And then I saw him come up to the microphone and they said he was the founder of the league and everything. And it's Pat Brisson, you know, and I'm laughing my ass off. Well, next thing you know, they might have carried over to an indoor league. I'm wondering if that Trottier thing was an indoor league because you're talking in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
So it probably got bigger. because this was like in the 80s when I saw this. So I'm sure it carried over and got bigger, but maybe Trottier had a vested interest in the program and maybe was trying to draw some fans. You never know. I'd like to know the story on that. Maybe we'll have to do some backtracking on that, Joe.
That could be. That's possible. I'll see how much info I can dig up. Actually, one of the assistant coaches on the team was an old NHLer, Warren Young. Remember him? He didn't have a long trip. He played a handful of years. He was in Detroit for a season, mostly with Pittsburgh, though.
Yeah, he was one of those guys that came over with the during the Adam Oates signing, and he had like 35 goals here. We signed him to an ungodly contract because he had that 40-some goals playing with Lemieux. Like, Joe, you could score 40 with Lemieux.
I would take it. I would take my job after it, too.
Yes, exactly. But I'm just saying, Warren Young came here, and he was a horrible one-dimensional player, and nobody could get him the puck. And that project ended quickly. But I think Warren Young played at Michigan Tech, too, didn't he?
He did. He played in Michigan Tech in the late 70s.
Right. So he had a run to come back home, perhaps. And that's, I remember Larry Robinson in the showers, man. When I was with Montreal in my first training camp, and that's when the Wings were signing all these old aging veterans and just giving them big money for their last contract. And Robinson was making a comment, just laughing at the Illiches, saying, maybe we need to go to Detroit. That's where they're paying. I just remember being a kid from Detroit and just, obviously I'm not saying nothing because it's my first training camp. I'm just sitting there shutting up, but yeah, I remember that comment and everybody was laughing, but that's where the players would go. And, look at the history in the 80s, man. It's like early to mid 80s, a lot of aging veterans. I mean, Brad Park came over here for crying out loud, and I think Illich gave him a pizza franchise or two just to come over.
Right.
It was almost like we were the laughing stock of the NHL, and I got to see it from one of the more stable franchises, players even making jokes about it in the dressing room. Illich got the last laugh on them, eh?
For sure. The Islanders' current leader is Josh Bailey with 17 points. Number seven is the Boston Bruins, and surprisingly, the defenseman that leads that team is not Bobby Orr, it's Ray Bourque, 161 points.
Yeah, that's crazy. Now, that's one thing, Joe, if you would have threw at me, like, who's the Boston Bruin playoff point leader, probably would have guessed, like, Esposito or, somebody like that. But, Ray Bourque's name, and then they missed the playoffs for quite a few years. I think when you telling me that, when we talked about Boston.
Right, yep.
About, 10 years or so, which is shocking.
Yeah, they had a pretty big gap in there. I'll see if I can dig it back up in case anyone listening didn't hear that show. But yeah, they were, a pretty big stretch of not, it was in the 90s they'd missed, but it was no, I got to go back and look, but.
That cup loss to Edmonton, I think they went.
That's what we talked about. It wasn't the missing the playoffs. It was he hadn't been to the Stanley Cup Finals since 88 and then he played in the 2001 Cup with the Avalanche. Okay. They had quite a few playoff appearances, but that was, other than that Stanley Cup, they only had one or two other deep playoff runs that took them to the third round.
Okay, that makes sense, because I was going to say, if they had that long of a drought, how can you have this many points? Because that's a lot of points, especially for a defenseman.
Yeah. No, he was in. They only missed the playoffs twice in his entire career, but yeah, they had that late 80s, early 90s, they had a really good team, and they made it to that cup final where they didn't stand much of a chance in 88, but yeah, they had some pretty deep runs into the early 90s, but you can't, they had Pittsburgh on their side of the bracket, so
yeah,
the buck stopped in Pittsburgh in the early 90s.
Well, let's talk about Ray for a little bit. A lot of his points, Joe, like you'd think, okay, he joined the rush a lot, and you think that would be the case, but I don't remember him being that type of player. I think a lot of his points were bombs from the point, or him just like getting a lot of assists, because he could shoot it. He had a good low shot, which he had a lot of players like Rick Middleton and, you know, other guys that were around there that, like, big rangy forwards that could get garbage. And, you know, I don't know. He just seemed to be one of those guys. He got a lot of his points on a power play because he could walk the line and find seams to get his shot through. So, yeah, he's that. Out of all these this list so far, this is the biggest shock for me, 161 points for Raypool.
Yeah, I don't remember him being – he wasn't like a Paul Coffey, like a flashy skater, like you said, someone that joins the rush. I think he made a good first pass out of his zone. He definitely facilitated well in the offensive zone, a real good shot. I liked his shot, but he did have – and he did have, you know, he probably would have had even more points had Cam Neely stayed healthy. I think Cam Neely is one of the great underrated players that people nowadays don't talk enough about. His career was cut short, and I think he helped Ray out a lot with getting in the front of the net and creating havoc with that big old body of his.
Right. Cam, well, I played against him in the Memorial Cup, and he is a big rangy guy. You know, he's 6'3 or whatever, but I just – I know Bork, you know, guy could skate, man. He had probably one of the most powerful skaters from the blue line in his days, his playing career. Don't remember too many guys that could flat out, you know, rip the ice up like he could. He's a different kind of skater than Paul Coffey. Paul Coffey was more fluid, more could just fly. Effortlessly, but Ray, man, you could hear him coming, just ripping ice up.
Right. Next on the list, number 8, another original 16, 150 points for Stan Mikita, the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, this guy, man, you know what's weird about this guy? He was labeled One year by a poll by the players as one of the most dirty players in the game in NHL history. And then he also won Lady Bing trophies later in his career. It's kind of crazy how you see that from one player. But I think it more indicates that he played a lot, you know, over 20 years and saw different styles come and go, you know what I mean? I mean, early in his career, he had to be dirty to survive. He's not a big guy.
Man, he's not a North American either, so playing in the 50s and 60s, he had to be dirty.
Good point. I think he's Czechoslovakian or something, which not too many foreign guys came over from Europe and played in the NHL, but he did it well, different styles, and I just remember watching him in the 70s playing the Red Wings, and he had that bubble helmet, you know?
Yep.
Even though he's smooth, just different style. I guess a lot of casual hockey fans probably know him more through the movie Wayne's World, because he did own that donut shop in Chicago. Right. But anyway, just a solid player and played with a lot of good line mates. You know, Cliff Coral played on the blue line on that team, also had an ugly bubble helmet, but he had Jim Pappin on his line and I think Doug Jarrett and guys like that. Guys, good hockey. They had good hockey teams. I mean, Dennis Hall, you know, Bobby Hall, you know. But I think a lot of his damage in the playoffs was done early in his career.
Yeah, I remember, obviously never saw him play live when he was in the league, but I knew he won Lady Bing trophies, and you just see pictures of the guy, and he looks like a mean dude. So I used to just, whenever he came up or they showed him or clips of him on Hockey Night in Canada, wherever you'd see his face pop up, I remember just thinking, like, how can this guy be winning the Lady Bing trophy? He looks like a mean guy.
Yeah, he looked like a guy, just an ornery guy. He never had a smile. I think it was more the foreign look, but he did use his stick pretty well, like Ted Lindsay, you know. He carved you up pretty good.
Yeah, the active leader Patrick Kane, 123 points. So they'll probably become the franchise leader at some point before his career is over.
Yeah, he should pass that, and Hayes might even pass him. He's got 110. They probably got another run in them as long as their recent draft picks pan out, and their drafts need to go well too, Joe. People talk about the Red Wings. Chicago is on the pressure seat too. You know, they just fired, I think, one of their head guys in management, and it's been there for a long time, and they're looking for answers too, and I think that's gonna be a true indicator if Kane even comes close.
Yeah, you
know, what's he stand at right now?
123. He's got 27 points to go, so that's another two deep playoff runs he would get there.
Yep, and you know, and with Taze, it's probably another three or four good playoff runs. But yeah, so I don't know if Chicago has another one in them, but I guess the draft in the next couple of years is going to determine that. So
yeah, and I like going through these lists, you get, especially when they give you more info. And I see a name like Steve Larmer. I haven't heard that name in a long time. I used to hate. I hated when the Blackhawks played the Red Wings. It seemed like he always scored when they played Detroit back in the 80s, 90s.
He was a good player, man. He played with Al Secord, and obviously Dennis Savard was his center, and he's on this list, 145. He's only 5 points behind Stan Mikita. But I would think if you would have gave me the option to guess, I would have thought Dennis Savard would have been, you know, ahead of Stan Mikita, but because they had more playoff opportunity. But yeah, those were good teams to hate, the Chicago Blackhawks and Bees for sure.
The number nine, Mike Modano, 145 points for the Dallas Stars. He's the highest scoring American born player in NHL history in the playoff points.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, do you think he was the best American-born player ever? I don't.
No, probably not. I wouldn't give that to him. I would have to think. I wouldn't say Modano. I mean, I would name Joe Mullen just because I really liked Joe Mullen. I was a little kid and liked him. I mean, Pat LaFontaine, I think, was probably better, even though his career was cut short.
Pat was better, a better player. Different types of players, too. I mean, but I think maybe even there's a better one. I mean, you could say Chelios. I don't know. Yeah. It's like there's a lot of great American players, but I know there's got to be somebody, and I'm not thinking of them right now, that I'd probably pick before Pat or him. But that might be a topic for another show.
Yeah, you could even throw Patrick Kane in the argument. His career's not done, but
another
great American-born player. Yeah, we'll have to put a list together and just run through it. Let's do that on another show.
Yeah, we will do that.
Yeah. All right, rounding out. Well, Jamie Benn's their current leader with 30 points.
Talk about Madonna real quick. The guy was 6'3". He could skate like the wind. They had great teams in Dallas. One thing I question about him is not his skill, but, you know, why couldn't that team have more success? Mm-hmm. You think he would win more than – because they had some good talent over there. And I know a lot, you know, you might just say, well, it's because they had to get past Detroit. But there was times when I thought they had the most talent in the Western Conference, and they should have made more cup appearances. I mean, what was it with that team? I'm thinking maybe a lot of it had to do with the leadership on that team. Not really sure Modano ever embraced that role. Which probably would lead me to maybe say he was the greatest American player of all time, because he had all the flash and dash and the numbers, but he didn't have the team cachet to go along with it.
Right. Yeah, and it's surprising. He said the other guys that are close, Bellows, Neil Broughton, Bobby Smith, like they're not even close. 62 points behind. And according to this, it's the widest margin from a leader to second on the team in scoring.
So yeah, well, it tells you over the course of his career, they had some good teams in Minnesota and Dallas eventually when they moved. But, you know, I just think they were always like, they underachieve all the time. Even those Minnesota teams, like you just mentioned, those three players, I like those early 80s Minnesota teams, but, you know, they could just never, they underachieve. Probably if another show we could do is teams that underachieve, because I'd probably pick Dallas and Minnesota probably three or four times over again.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
Some of those seasons, because they had a lot of talent and everything, just could never get over the hump, you know. And I don't know what it was. Was it goaltending? Was it poor leadership? Who knows?
Yeah, well, the one year they did put it together, they had to run into Lemieux and the Penguins in the finals.
Well, or in 81 with the Islanders.
Yep.
You know, when Dino was a rookie and Broughton and Bellows and all those guys were just coming into the league and Bobby Smith was tearing it up. Fun teams to watch, Steve Payne. Yeah, so that's another name I'm surprised is not on that list, Steve Payne. Yeah, but anyway, fun team to watch, just underachieved in my eyes, and I think Madonna would get a better shake from me as one of the top USA players of all time if he produced more hardware, but that's another topic.
Yep. All right, rounding out the top 10, 126 points for the Washington Capitals, the Great Eight, Alex Ovechkin. It surprised me. It didn't surprise me that he was at 10 with just 126 points, but I think that just goes to show the knock for a long time that he just wasn't producing in the playoffs.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, they got knocked out of the first round how many times?
Yeah.
And they actually had to wear on him because he's putting up 50 goals a year and, you know, getting it done in the regular season. And then once the playoffs started, he never could shift gears and play that complete game. And then, you know, goes and has dinner over Gretzky's house one night with his wife just to pick Wayne's brain about how to win championships. It got that frustrating for him that he had to do that.
Right.
And, you know, he figured it out, and it's not an easy trophy to win, but, you know, he didn't do the little things. I remember watching those teams and, you know, their goaltending always let them down too, until Holtby finally took control that one year and they made their deep run. But man, they got knocked out against teams that I thought they were better than, you know, even some of the Pittsburgh teams.
Yeah, they definitely resembled some of those Wings teams in the 90s, where they were arguably one of the best two or three teams in the league and got bumped by the 8 seed.
Well, then they're, you know, even before Ovi came on, you had the, I remember the one team they had with Langway and all that. Remember, he was a defenseman young Kevin Hatcher. And I think they had their four leading scorers, probably their top six scorers, four of them were defensemen. I think they led the league in point production, and they might all time have the most points from a defensive core on those teams. They were winning president trophies. Brian Murray was coaching them, I believe, Brian Murray, and they just could never get over the hump, and I don't know what it was. And then even when Ovi came, they lost, but in different ways. And it's like that was a frustrating time for that franchise. And then you know, it's almost like you're glad they won, and it made it even sweeter because Ovi was enduring, I think, a lot of that frustration from the fan base and NHL people all over the league. For not being a two-way player and not willing to sacrifice his game, the defensive side of the puck, to make a difference. But, yeah, he's got, what, 126 points here?
Yep. And his centerman's number two with 106.
Yeah, I like Nick Bax. What a good player.
Yes, I agree. He's another guy. He's almost... He's almost like the Yari Curry. He just doesn't get talked about nearly as much as he should for what he brings to that team.
Yeah, he's not a free agent this year, is he?
He might be.
Yeah, I don't know. He's on his last leg. I think he's how many years? I don't know. He's got to be in his 15th year. I don't know. Maybe not. He's so quiet. He so does everything so unassuming. I'm sure his time in the league is that way too. I just the dude does everything well, and he's hardly ever talked about. You know.
Right. It looks like he got re-signed this season in January.
Okay.
Yeah, they extended him 5 years in January.
All right, so he'll finish his string out.
He'll finish up in Washington. They'll make him a career capital.
Wondering if they got a, I'm sure they got another cup in them too. So that's going to be interesting. We talked about maybe Crosby. I made the comment maybe he has two more in him.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an interesting little battle between those two because we know the rivalry there between Ovi and Crosby. But you got to throw the Nick Backstrom factor in there too. And it'll be Ovi and do they have any more cups left until their career is over, or is it going to be Malkin and Crosby? How many cups do they have?
Right.
Be kind of interesting thing to watch, you know?
Yep. Well, all right. That's top 10 all-time leaders in franchise history. We're going to cover 11 through 20 next time and round out the list after that. So until next time, Joe and Tom, we'll see you back here next time on The Lighter Side.